KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
At 7:06, we have mostly clear skies here, sunshine coming out here in the Nishna Valley, and right now 58 degrees. That was our overnight low temperature here as well. We look for partly to mostly sunny skies today, cooler and less humid than we've had the past few days. Northwest winds 10 to 15 and a high of 82. Good morning. I'm Chris Parks with a check of the latest in state and local news on KJAN. Two sheriff's deputies were injured during a pursuit on Thursday night. The Iowa State Patrol reports 22-year-old Mills County Deputy Jacob Spinagle was actively pursuing a suspect vehicle northbound on 357th Street at around 9:17 p.m. As he approached the curve for Epperson Avenue, due to heavy gravel dust, the 2019 Dodge Charger that Spinagle was driving left the road to the left and came to rest in a farm field. Deputy Spinagle was transported by Silver City Rescue to UNMC in Omaha. At about the same time and location, Montgomery County Sheriff's Deputy 25-year-old Andrew Askey crashed the 2018 Dodge Charger he was driving at the same location, also due to the heavy gravel and obscuring of vision. The deputy was transported by Red Oak Rescue to UNMC as well. Both deputies were wearing their seatbelts at the times of those crashes. In other news, state officials say power to Alliant Energy customers should be restored by next Tuesday, and all Mid-American Energy customers should have electricity by this weekend. Governor Kim Reynolds says she met on Thursday night with executives from Alliant, Mid-American, and ITC Midwest. That's the company that owns hundreds of miles of high-voltage transmission lines that went down during Monday's storm.
In addition, you've got people that are working around the clock. Alliant's doing a great job. They gave us an update this morning. They've moved their timeline up. But what we need to do is we need to get power to Iowans and to those that are affected.
Reynolds has asked governors in surrounding states for generators that are powerful enough to run utility substations that receive the power from the high-voltage transmission lines. Oklahoma's governor is sending two, but Reynolds cautions these are temporary fixes and permanent repairs to the power grid will take some time. Iowa Utilities Board Chairwoman Jerry Husser says the board just ordered all of the state's utilities to provide granular data to customers about when power will be restored.
In addition, Governor Reynolds asked, and Mid-American Energy and other state utilities responded by offering their resources as they become available to Alliant Energy and ITC Midwest with their repowering efforts to further accelerate the restoration timeline.
And as of 1:30 on Friday afternoon, online data indicated that nearly 170,000 homes and businesses in the state were enduring a fifth day without electricity. And Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds on Friday issued a disaster proclamation in response to that severe weather system that moved across Iowa and caused that widespread damage and those power outages. The proclamation now allows state resources to be utilized to respond to and recover from the effects of the severe weather in Cass and Guthrie counties. The proclamation also activates the Iowa Individual Assistance Grant Program for qualifying residents, along with the Disaster Case Management Program. Governor Reynolds previously had declared it a disaster and activated those programs for 25 other counties, including Audubon, Dallas, and Madison here in the KJAN listening area. Proclamations may be issued for additional counties in the future here as well as more damage is assessed. And Governor Kim Reynolds says she'll be submitting the paperwork on Monday for a federal disaster declaration for areas of the state that have been devastated by last Monday's derecho storm.
You know, there's criteria that you have to make. So we got people doing surveillance. Realistically, by the time we collect the information, that's just how long it's going to take.
Iowa Homeland Security and Emergency Management Director Joyce Flynn says Civil Air Patrol planes were in the air Friday afternoon helping to chart that damage.
They're flying several of the county areas doing GIS mapping of debris piles because one of the things we have to do is give the federal government an idea of the magnitude of the disaster. We have estimates from utility companies. We're verifying those, and there is detailed information that has to go into that process.
Governor Reynolds has declared 25 of Iowa's 99 counties as disaster areas, as we mentioned, and then those additional two in Cass and Guthrie. But neither Reynolds nor Flynn indicated how many of those counties might be included in Monday's application.
The governor did ask if I could have this done today. It's the only time I've told her no. We could not get it done this quickly, but we're working on it, and we will have a letter prepared for her signature so she can submit that declaration on Monday.
Flynn and Reynolds spoke early on Friday afternoon in a news conference at the Cedar Rapids Fire Department. Reynolds told reporters she has talked with President Trump earlier this week and with Vice President Pence on Thursday to lay the groundwork for a quick response once the request is formally presented. Iowa State officials say that 75 more students who are moving back to campus have tested positive for COVID-19. The 75 students who had the virus represent a 2.2% positivity rate. The university announced Friday it tested 3,472 students between August 7th and Thursday. That's the same positivity rate the school announced last week when 66 positive cases were found among the 3,037 students tested. Students began moving back to campus July 31st and will continue to return through Sunday, with classes beginning Monday. The university has reserved two halls for students to quarantine, or they can quarantine at home if possible. Environmental officials in Iowa are investigating after officials say a central Iowa grocery store dumped 800 gallons of spoiled milk, leading to a fish kill. The Iowa Department of Natural Resources says the incident happened Wednesday morning when officials discovered a stretch of four-mile creek fouled by rancid milk and traced it to a Hy-Vee store in Ankeny. Officials say a store employee instructed workers to dump the milk following a power outage caused by a rare high windstorm Monday. Television station KCCI reports that Hy-Vee released a statement saying the store employee made an uninformed decision. DNR officials say minnows and small game fish have died in a span of a half mile in the creek, and the enforcement is being considered in that situation. And the sounds of children's voices are starting to fill the classrooms and playground at the new Red Oak Child Development Center. The Montgomery County Child Development Association Board of Directors, the ROCDC staff, Red Oak Community School District staff, and representatives from the Red Oak Chamber and Industry Association, along with their children, celebrated the official ribbon cutting for the facility on Friday at 10 a.m. Laura Claver, Montgomery County Child Development Board Vice Chair, said, "We've come so far in the last 2 years. We've overcome so much, and now to be here today and to see the playground filled with children, there are just no words. Thank you." The event was small and socially distanced, with attendees wearing masks, but you could still hear the excitement in the voices of Kelly Osheim, MCCDA Board Chair, and Jackie Howell, ROCDC Director, as they addressed the group. The Red Oak Chamber and Industry congratulated and welcomed the facility to the community, and the children in attendance gathered around to help hold the ribbon and make that ceremonial cut. Teachers then welcomed board members and attendees into their classrooms to show them around. The facility will officially open their doors on Monday, and according to Hal, the classrooms are almost full already. The center's fundraising success tells the story of the community's support, with almost $900,000 raised of their $1 million goal. And the Red Oak Child Development Center will be located at the Red Oak Community School District's Early Childhood Center, which is formerly the Washington School, and will offer full and part-time care to children ages 6 weeks to 12 years old. If you're interested in getting more information, you can visit redoakcdc.org, or you can also check out their Facebook page for more information as well. That's a look at some of the latest in state and local news. Now taking a look at your funeral announcements here this morning. Verl Aronson, age 92, of Harlan, died Friday at home. Funeral services for Verl Aronson will be held on Monday at 11 a.m. at the First Baptist Church in Harlan. Polly Jones Funeral Home Harlan has the arrangements. John Roy Big John Butler, age 80, of Trainer, a native of Atlantic, died on August the 7th in Springfield, Missouri. Funeral services for John Big John Butler will be held on here today at 10 a.m. at the Hoy Kilnoski Funeral Home in Council Bluffs. Merle Trent, age 90, of Stewart, died Monday at home. Graveside services for Merle Trent will be held today at 10:30 a.m. at the West Cemetery in Panora. Twig Funeral Home Panora has arrangements. Lila Finn, age 94, of Apache Junction, Arizona, formerly of Oakland, died July 28th at the Aurora Place in Apache Junction. Funeral services for Lila Finn will be held today at 1 p.m. at the Lus Hills Funeral Home in Carson. Michael Todd Hoffman, age 52, of Earlham, died Tuesday at Mercy Westlakes Hospital in West Des Moines. Celebration of Life visitation for Michael Todd Hoffman will be held here today from 1 to 3 p.m. at the Johnson Family Funeral Home in Earlham. Mabel Amy Earhart, age 92, of Atlantic and formerly of Altoona, died Thursday at the Cass County Memorial Hospital in Atlantic. Graveside services for Mabel Amy Earhart will be held on Monday at 2 p.m. in the Altoona Cemetery. Roland Funeral Service Atlantic has arrangements. Janie Adams, age 65, of Des Moines, formerly of Fontenelle, died Sunday at the Taylor Hospice House in Des Moines. Funeral services for Janie Adams will be held Tuesday at 11 a.m. at the Steen Funeral Home in Fontenelle. And due to COVID-19, there will be limited seating. Steen Funeral Home Greenfield has arrangements. Jay Becker, age 61, of Yakima, Washington, the son of the late Richard and Harriet Becker, died July 9th in Irvine, California. A celebration of life graveside service for Jay Becker will be held on October 10th at 11:30 a.m. in the Atlantic Cemetery. Roland Funeral Service Atlantic assisting the family with arrangements. Jerry Wayne Big J. Miller, Jr., age 38, of Atlantic, died Wednesday at CHI Health Bergen Mercy in Omaha. A celebration of life service for Jerry Big J. Miller will be held at a later date. Roland Funeral Home in Atlantic has the arrangements. LaVon Pearl Bargenquast, age 94, of Avoca, died Tuesday at Mertu Memorial Hospital in Harlan. Funeral services for LaVon Bargenquast are pending for a later date. Polly Jones Funeral Home Avoca has arrangements. Mary Ellen Quant, age 99, of Audubon, died Tuesday at the Audubon County Memorial Hospital. A private family funeral service is planned for Mary Ellen Quant. Kessler Funeral Home Audubon has arrangements. That's a look at your latest in news and funeral announcements here on KJAN. I'm Chris Parks, KJAN News.